I will call the meeting to order, and Representative Slocum, have you reviewed the minutes of March 10th?
Madam Chair, I have thoroughly and carefully, and I move we approve them.
And Representative Slocum, that should be all you have to do today after your big day yesterday.
Thank you.
Representative Slocum moves the minutes of March 10th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. We have a game plan today, but I'm not going to go through it until more members get here. But I, so we'll just start with the first bill. And I see Representative Fritz is not here either. Here she comes. You're on. Run. Representative Fritz, do you have someone to move your bill, or should I move it for you?
If you would, Madam Chair, I appreciate it.
I will move House File 28 to be passed without recommendation and return to the Finance Committee. And Representative Fritz, before we start, has an amendment. The A090094 amendment to get the bill in the shape that she wants it. Is there any discussion on the amendment or any questions? All in favor of the A090094 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Fritz, House File 28.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Representative Fritz, and I represent District 26B, and I'm from Faribault, Minnesota, where the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind are located. And we have an opportunity for our state academies to get a wind generator to help us with our needs down there. We have Linda Mitchell, who is with me today, who I'm going to turn this over to. She and I have talked about this. Actually, during my campaign, I heard that behind the state academies was the second windiest spot in Rice County. And, of course, I thought, wow, that's pretty good. We could use some help down there. And, of course, you all know that, the state academies is ours, and it's one of our duels in the state of Minnesota. So I would like to, at this time, turn it over to Linda Mitchell.
Thank you, Representative Fritz, and welcome, Superintendent Mitchell.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, this is not one of the usual things that we are here to talk to you about. I will do a very brief introduction in terms of who we are and what we do for anybody that might not know us. But we are the Minnesota State Academies, which is a state agency made up of two very unique and special schools, the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind and the Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf. We are located in Faribault, Minnesota, as Patty said, 50 miles down 35W, right off the freeway. Having said that, we have been in existence for over 140 years. We serve children from birth to 21 years of age who are deaf, hard of hearing, or blind, visually impaired. We provide FAPE for the state of Minnesota for those students who are on individual education plans, IEPs. We are special ed facilities. Having said that, we will be talking a little bit later about some of our students who complete their coursework in high school but need additional services and can receive those services as long as their IEPs are not signed. We can serve them until they're 21 years of age. Long story short, Patty is correct. We own 28 acres of land. I believe in your packets you have an aerial view. This is on the east side of Faribault, up on the hill. This has been leased farmland for many years. You may know that our neighbors to the north in Northfield have, both St. Olaf and Carleton, have erected wind turbines. And we have done a few years ago, and are doing again, the wind studies that show us that it is one of the windiest places in Rice County. As we look at the facts that I gave to you, this is an opportunity for us to do what we think is right for the planet and right for Minnesota. The fact that we own this land, that it is close enough to our campus, And I have to confess to you folks that I know just enough about this to maybe be dangerous, but I do understand two things. And one of them is that if you get hooked up on the correct side of the grid and we can actually use the energy ourselves, it can be 7 or 8 cents worth, as opposed to having to hook it up to XL and then get the 1.5 to 2 cents worth. So, having said that, the best economic advantage is there as well, and that's just something that happens to be a geographical coincidence, not because we planned it that way. Our 2008 electrical bill, the electrical part of our XL Energy bill, was over $200,000 this last year. And a 1 megawatt wind turbine would pay for itself in less than 10 years and would provide us with more electricity than we would need if this is all put together properly. And there would, in fact, be some left that we could turn around and sell should we need to. We believe this is the right thing to do because it would assist us in becoming more self-sufficient and obviously promote renewable energy in our county and in our area. We are a state agency, but we are also two special schools, and I know that other school districts have also benefited from this kind of solution to their utility costs. Two things that we would like you to know about, because we see some great collaborative ventures ahead. One of them is that you may have heard of Moventus, which is a Finnish company that makes wind turbine gears. And they are not here yet, but they are coming to Faribault. We think it would be a great place if we had their gears up on the hill and they needed to show somebody how they worked or wanted to demonstrate right there, that that would be within the vicinity. The second piece is that South Central College is also in Faribault and is looking at this kind of education and training as career opportunities for students that come through the Faribault South Central College.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I see your appropriations for this wind turbine, but do you understand that there are additional costs with basically rewiring your buildings to accept that type of electricity? It's a different voltage than what normally would come in from Excel or NFT.
Superintendent Mitchell.
I'm going to defer
Representative.
The appropriation that we have does include the planning of this, and that would be part of that, I'm sure, to that knowledge for us and that that piece.
Mm-hmm. Representative Epstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, and thank you for your testimony. Just wanted to give you a little bit of experience, and I have some questions for you on it. The Wayzata School Board did this exact same thing about 5 years ago when we had a budget crisis. Our energy costs spiked about $400,000 in 1 year. It was a very much of a burden on the district. And we decided to go into a partnership, a test partnership, with our local energy company. We did put up a wind turbine on our high school campus. It was a wonderful opportunity for us to save money. Our science teachers were extremely excited about it for curriculum. And we did this for about, it was an 18-month test, and at the end of that time we had a contract where we would pay for half the cost of the turbine, which was about $2 million at that time for our school district. At the end of the 18 months, instead of $1 million being our with the cost, we were testing it, they came back to us and said, we can't sell this to you for $1 million. It's now $2 million. We could not afford it, and we had to let go of the project. And we were very happy that we had gone into a test market phase of it first because of the unexpected cost increases in putting up such a facility and housing it. Is there any thought on your part to partner with the wind turbine company that you were just talking about, or another company, test it for a year, and then see if the cost is stabilized and you can go forward with it? Because it is a wonderful way of teaching as well as saving energy and being green in that. But I'm just sharing that experience with you.
Superintendent Mitchell.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. That is all valuable information to us, and certainly we would take under advisement. We are excited about the possibilities as well. If you have been to Faribault before, you know on the east side we are up on the hill. To our north we have Shattuck St. Mary's, which is a private school, and we also have the District 1 hospital south of us, both of whom have also expressed interest in being a part of something like this, so that we hope we can keep our options open. We certainly wouldn't want to do something that wasn't financially responsible to do. We are, of course, very excited about the educational part of this because we know how much the students would get from being able to actually watch it happen. But I appreciate the information. Thanks.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fritz, I noticed we amended the $1.5 million into line 8, but we did not on line 13. Is there a reason we didn't do that?
I'm sorry, thank you.
Yep.
When you said that, I thought, by God, he's right, and then I'm looking at it a little more carefully. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We need to always be watching what we're doing because we all need to be double-checked. Are there any people in the audience who wish to testify for or against the bill? Okay, if there's no more questions and no testimony, then... before we vote, members, I'm going to, now that there's more members here, inform you of the game plan so you'll know what we're doing. We have four bonding bills today, and we're going to pass these today out of the committee to the Finance Committee without recommendation. You may remember, those of you who are returning members, last biennium we had a bill that we were asked to put it in, and then we sent that bill on to the bonding committee. This year, we are just sending off the separate bills without recommendation, just for the process, so we're not actually voting on them, yes or no, just without recommendation. But stick around for the rest of the hearing, because at the end, after we've heard all the bills, all these four bills, then each of you are going to fill out an orange ballot that Liz has prepared, and you will be rank ordering them, and then the staff will tally that up. And then tomorrow you'll get to find out the results. And then when all those bills arrive in bonding without recommendation, then I, on behalf of all of us, will present to that committee our final recommendations. So we have to listen carefully, and because we're going to have to prioritize this if we want to have any say in the bonding committee. As we know, they will prioritize for us if we don't do it ourselves. So that's why we're voting on this now without recommendation. And then we also have a couple of bills that are in the Energy Committee that we'll hear at the very end of this agenda. We don't really have the bills here. They're in Energy, but they do involve K-12 schools. And so those we won't be prioritizing and voting on. The Energy Committee will, but we thought you would like to see them, and certainly I would too, because they do involve schools. So I'll renew my motion that House File 28, as amended, be passed onto the Finance Committee without recommendation. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Fritz, and you can stay right there, of course, because you have the next bill. And that is House File 125, and I will move that for the committee's consideration. And Representative Fritz.
Thank you again, Madam Chair and members. Again, we have a request, capital bonding request for the state academies for the blind and deaf school. And this is a project that actually I have some other folks with me too, so I'm going to just tell you what it is. It's a building that we'd like to build on our land for our students who are between the age of 18 and 21. We don't have a facility for them at this time, and this would be built by the South Central College Carpentry class. So I have with me
President Stover on my far right here, who is the president of the South Central College in Faribault, Minnesota, and he will be also presenting from their side on this as well. And I have Linda Mitchell again, who will lead us off. And then also Bob Duncan, who is the administrator at the, is it administrator, I want to get this right, at the, okay, many years at the blind school in Faribault.
Very good, and in his former life, he was superintendent of one of my schools.
Okay.
So is it Superintendent Mitchell starting?
Yes. I will just give you a brief background for this. We're requesting something that is maybe a little bit out of the box, but in this time that we're living in, it seemed like the right thing to do. It is a win-win situation for each of our entities. The School for the Blind has a need for residential housing separate from what is available, our dorms for our K-12 students. One of the things that a couple of years ago, I know in a committee we were challenged about working more closely with some of the other agencies like State Services for the Blind, who provide services to people who are blind. Having taken that to heart, we have put a great deal of emphasis on improving that transition time that students have from when they may finish their academic coursework. And without getting on a soapbox here and getting into a lot of detail about blind children, oftentimes they can do very well in the mainstream setting in a public school if they have access to information at the same time as their sighted peers. Their issues become much more challenging when they need to navigate the world independently and live independently. So what we were seeing happen was that they could do school very well in the classroom. And then when it came time to going on to higher education or to the world of work and careers, things got more difficult if they didn't have the background that they needed in terms of orientation and mobility, learning how to live independently. So having put more emphasis on that, I will turn this over to Dr. Duncan, and he can share with you a little bit about what we call the A-plus program, which is for students 18 to 21 who have not had their IEPs signed, their high school diplomas signed, and so still can be served through the special ed process.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Dr. Duncan, and if you could restate your name for the record and your title.
My name is Robert Duncan. I am presently the interim director at the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind. Thank you, Madam Chair and member of the committee. This project addresses a need that we have for students who are 18 to 21 year old. We have dorms right now, but those are built primarily for elementary through high school, and we're trying to get our students in the 18 to 21 year old age group as independent as they possibly can. In a dorm setting for K-12 doesn't lend itself very well for that. And so we had a need in conversations with South Central College, where a number of our students attend that are in the Academy Plus program. They had a need for their carpentry class. We had a need for apartments. And so it seemed to make sense to us to combine our forces to come up with a project that could be done financially far less than the traditional process for buildings on a state property through a state agency. This apartment, which you have a picture of in your handouts, as well as a floor plan, is designed right now and ready to go right down to the type of knobs that will be in the cabinets in the kitchen. Everything is ready to go. We're waiting for the approval of this bill, and then the carpentry class can begin. The carpentry class would do the carpentry part, and then the rest of the project would be bid out to local contractors. So I will be available for questions. Otherwise, I'll turn that over to Dr. Stover.
Welcome, Dr. Stover, if you could identify yourself for the case.
Yes, Keith Stover, president of South Central College. We have campuses in Faribault and Mankato, about 5,600 credit students. Of course, one of our premier programs on the Faribault campus is our carpentry program, and I believe we've had that program since 1964. So we have been building homes, speculation homes, that we've put on the market for years. In fact, I think this is the 42nd home that we've built. So not sure if that all adds up. You can add that up. The bottom line is it's a two-year program, and our freshman students, in other words, our first year in that program, do a remodeling project for a family in the community every year, and then that's their first semester work, and their second semester work is to build all the cabinetry for the sophomore house. So our sophomores have annually built a new home from ground up. Of course, we use local subcontractors, and we use our local lumber yards to furnish all the materials. An annual expense on a home is usually around $330,000 to $350,000. I would just tell you that last year's home is still on the market, and we're building this year's spec home. We have to have that experience for our students. And so what we're asking for this year is something very unique for the coming year, and that would be that we could partner with the School for the Deaf and build this approximate $400,000 home, single-level home, which is an accessible home, on their site, on their property. So it's a design-build concept, and we're just excited about the opportunity, and maybe you'll have some questions for us about that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. And are there questions from the members? Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like a win-win for both schools, and I like those cooperative ventures. Can you tell me the number of students, and are there going to be any staff members living in the house, too?
This is housed up to 8 students, there would be supervision, but not on site, because our whole plan is for these students to sort of like a finishing school for independent living, and we want to test them to their maximum limit, where we still have a bit of a safety net. So should there be any issues along the way, there would still be a call, cell phone call I can make to where our direct supervisors are on campus.
Any other questions? Any testimony for or against from the audience? Any closing statements? Superintendent Mitchell.
Madam Chair and committee members, the one thing that we have been hesitant, we know that there are more blind students out there in the mainstream who could benefit from this A-plus program, and we didn't talk a lot about that. But point being, we have been hesitant to advertise about it because we don't have any residential space for them to use. So we're kind of caught here with knowing that we have the professional staff and the skills and the available programming to be very supportive and assist these kids, but we do need a housing project or we're not going to be able to move it forward. So having said that, thank you all for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It sounds like a program to leverage the funds for future taxpayers who are working. So, thank you.
Well, thank you, members, and thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, and members will vote then to send on House File 125 without recommendation to the Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, then we have Representative Fault. And usually when we have a first-time member before our committee, somebody wants to say something to them. Is there anybody that...
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Rothwell is here, just a nick of time. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Falk, this year's first committee, your first hearing before the committee.
Thank you, members, and Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, yes, this is my first hearing before this committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Falk, to bring any treats to the committee.
I was just going to speculate if you would have asked me to bring milk and cookies.
So, is the answer no?
The answer is no.
And Madam Chair, I'll move the table.
Okay,
I withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Falk, welcome to the committee. And is Representative Garofalo, now that you've done that, would you like to move the bill for him?
No. I'm sorry, but no.
Representative Dietrich is nicer.
Sure.
Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich moves House File 588. We're passing these along, Representative Falk, all without recommendation to the Finance Committee, and then at the end of the hearing today, we will all be rank ordering all the bills. And then next week I'll present that to the bonding committee. But you get a pass with or without cookies today, because we're passing all these bills. So, please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bonding appropriation request for the School District of Dawson-Boyd with Western Minnesota. And what they're looking to do is to upgrade from their current boiler system to a geothermal heating system. And there's two parts of this. There's part for just the geothermal system, but there's also some upgrades relating to the school itself, for fresh air ventilation, to abatement of asbestos, and some sprinklers in unprotected areas. So the breakdown is, for the geothermal system, there's the cost of that's $1.9 million approximately, and the other upgrades are about $355,000. And this is one of those shovel-ready projects where the pre-engineering work has been done. They are looking to move forward, and they're looking to maximize and leverage federal stimulus money with state dollars and, to an extent, local dollars. As many probably have realized or found, like as I have, this process for how we allocate the federal stimulus money has been somewhat undefined. So we're trying to make sure that this is a project which is at least in the running. The real benefit is this project will save the school district $72,000 per year in respect to energy costs. I do have a letter here. I should have made copies. I apologize for that, which was sent to Congressman Colin Peterson, and I did a breakdown that the existing gas boiler system cost the school about $85,000 per year for heating. The geothermal system will cost the school district $12,000 per year for heating. Now, I'm not sure if that encompasses the cost of cooling as well, but these geothermal systems can serve a dual purpose where they function for heating in the wintertime, cooling in the summertime. Additionally, this is also a local system. A company formerly known as Econair, they've got their manufacturing facility in Appleton. That company is employing local workers. They're the ones who will be building and installing this system. So this is just a way to keep this project moving forward. It does pay dividends. These systems are very efficient, typically found in homes. My parents actually have a geothermal system in their home that they've been operating since 1994 for very low cost, very low maintenance. But it's a way to help our rural school out and to alleviate some of the costs that they're really, some of these districts are faced with declining enrollment, and they're finding it hard to keep themselves going, so they're trying to streamline and make themselves efficient if possible, and this is one such way to do that.
Very good. Questions from members? Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Did you have a bond issue for this on a referendum recently?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McFarland. I believe that the school district was working to get local money, but they're looking for some match or some help with the fact that there is federal stimulus money coming, and so we're trying to figure out the best way to leverage money. Now, I put in a request for the total amount with the anticipation that we're going to figure out what the local match will be, and we'll work down accordingly, but we want to make sure that we can try to leverage as much federal money for this project as possible, because at least in our interpretation, it fits that requirement to be in a shovel-ready project and for the greening and applying energy efficiency technologies to local schools.
According to my research, it shows that on the November 2008 ballot that the approval of a bond issue for replacement of a boiler system with geothermal heating and cooling system and a new fire sprinkler system passed 74%. Mm-hmm. So is this going to replace bonding money that's already been authorized by the voters?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McFarland. It could. This is brought to me by a number of the school board members as a way for them to try to help get some, basically leveraging, like I said before, of the federal stimulus money. When they thought that coming forward, they wanted to have a means to try to target that towards their district.
Thank you. Representative McFarland, was that okay? Maybe we could ask the staff, when a district passes a bond, well, we probably don't know this with the federal stimulus money, but when, if a district has passed a bond, and then do you know anything about how the stimulus money would work with that or not? Because we're all in uncharted waters, as
exactly.
Representative Falk has said, and to get positions is a good idea, but I just, maybe, sometimes they know things we don't.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Mr. Crowe.
Presumably, if it's an approved project, the district could qualify for federal money, which would allow them to do the project without levying the cost of the project against the voters and not selling the bond and not
so they could supplant then the Mr.
Brown. There is an issue if the bonds have already been sold, that state bonds can't essentially be used to repay the local bonds that have been sold. But I don't know in this case if the district has sold those bonds or not, and that only applies to the state bond authority, not the money they might receive as a direct state appropriation or from potentially the federal money. But essentially there's a prohibition against using the state bonds to repay local bonds under most of the state.
Okay, very good. Falk, do you know any more than that? Or?
Well, that's kind of the crux of the issue, is we're all kind of dealing in uncharted waters about how this federal money will be appropriated. So it's once again trying to position ourselves, because this is a project that is ready to move forward. And so if we could direct some of that money to a school that could really use it, they just want to be in a position where they could accept that money if it is available.
Okay, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Falk, with declining enrollment, is there any chance that this school might be closed or consolidated with another school some 5 years down the road?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newton. This, I don't believe that will be the case. There is declining enrollment, but schools and communities do try very hard to hang on to their identity, and one of the ways that's done is through the local school district, and we're working to try to ensure that we keep as many of our local school districts operating. They do provide jobs and do provide basically an anchoring for our communities. Dawson Boyd is a consolidated district as it is, and it is not a huge geographic district, but a fairly large geographic district. I mean, it's the better part of the eastern part of Lacaparral County and reaching into some of Yellow Medicine and wouldn't touch Swift County as well, but I mean, it is a consolidated district. There's another consolidated district to the west, which is Lacaparral Valley, which is basically Madison, Appleton. So we have seen consolidation, but we're to the point where consolidation starts to rub up against additional transportation costs, where if you're going to be driving an entire county, you're spending so much more on transportation costs bringing kids into the schools that you start to lose the efficiencies of further consolidation.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair, then the possibility is this particular school that you're looking at is not one that would be closed if you have to do additional consolidation.
Madam Chair, Representative Newton, it would be highly unlikely if this school would be closing as a result of consolidation.
Thank you.
Representative Rockwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, my understanding is that in terms of the matching requirements from the local level or the state level for the federal stimulus package, we don't know that yet. Is that a correct statement?
Whichever wants to answer here. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, Representative Grafflow, my understanding is that there isn't matching requirement. Well, we don't know a lot about it, for sure, but I think there's some understanding that there'll be projects that are paid solely with federal money.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question from Mr. Strom, I think. If we transfer this these bonds from the local levy to the local referendum to the state bonds, does that then add to the state debt in the outlying years for our state?
Mr. Scott.
Madam Chair, Representative Jeffy, yes, with all the bills that you're hearing today that are from the state general obligation bond fund, the bonds are sold by the state and then the bonds are repaid with state money from the income and sales tax, essentially. So those go into the cost of servicing the debt service. The bonds all get essentially rolled together for the big bond sale that the state has, but that goes into the state's repayment cost for those bonds. So under the bills you're hearing today, on all the bills you're hearing today, those are general obligation bonds, and the principal and interest on those bonds would be paid by the state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strong, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. I don't see any other questions. Is there any testimony in the audience for or against the bill? No more questions from members. Then Representative Dietrich renews her motion. Well, let's see. Representative Falk, you have a closing statement. Forgot that part.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not. I wish I could have brought some people down, but unfortunately, due to the weather, they were not able to travel. But the school board and many members of the community are behind this, and they're trying to do the right thing to position their school district to be as efficient and sustainable as possible. And I do commend them for taking these first steps and proactively doing this, because they put this process in place before we knew the federal stimulus was coming, so they're just looking at for some way to try to get a piece of that pie. But thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. thank you, Representative Falk. You did a wonderful job despite our hazing and despite your witnesses being snowed in western Minnesota. Representative Dietrich renews her motion that House File 588 pass without recommendation and be sent to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passed. The motion prevails and the bill is passed. And now we have Representative Saylor, who... Representative Saylor, Shannon has just told me, is presenting a bill in another committee, and she has the last three bills. The first one is our fourth one to rank, and then the last two are for information only because they are in the Energy Committee. So maybe while we're waiting here, Ms. Patrick could pass out the ballots, or Ms. Mandelman, rather, so we at least have them or have the pages do it. That's a great idea. Okay, that's an excellent idea. And while those ballots are being passed out, and you need to hear the next bill before you can actually mark them, but Mr. Strom has suggested, and I think it's a good idea, if we have the department go ahead and give us the background on Red Lake, because I'm sure Representative Saylor knows this already, being that's her district, but returning members know, and new members will soon know, that we usually have a project that seems from Red Lake because they just have such needs, and they don't have any property wealth on the Native American land. And so we always do the building of buildings, the building maintenance, and it is a state responsibility because they can't if they pass the bond, it wouldn't come out with any money, having no property wealth at all. So we keep careful track, and we try to make sure everything is on track and being done in a responsible way. So if you two could, the first one, tell me who you are, because I cannot recall, and then we'll hear the background information. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Representative. My name's John Bolger. I'm from the Minnesota Department of Education Program Finance area. Next to me is Superintendent Mark Gitch. From the Red Lake School District. MDE is currently working with the school district to complete a review and comment on the proposed project. The district has reworked the master plan, and the proposed project is for three schools, Panema Elementary, Red Lake Elementary, and Red Lake Middle and High School. Recently, the district made a decision to move the fifth grade to the middle school, and this has recently changed the bonding request. The district is exploring and planning to apply for federal Impact Aid school construction funds and stimulus funding. The district last applied for a maximum effort loan in 2007, and Red Lake has not applied for a maximum effort loan this year because the 2009 session is not a capital bonding year. That's next year.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to come before you and to talk a little bit about our request for a maximum effort loan and some bonding here. As has been explained.
And if you've also introduced yourself with your title for the tape.
Okay. Sure. My name is Brent Gish. I'm the superintendent at the Red Lake School District number 38.
Thank you.
Our district is 230,000 acres. It's a very large district with one of our attendance units, right, if you know the Red Lake area, right between the two lakes, and that's Panema. It is a K-8 system. We have an elementary school in the Red Lake community as well as a combination middle school and high school. We had put in, over 7 years ago, we put in our original request to address the construction needs of the school district here, and it's been ongoing because there hasn't been a total funding of the projects. We come before you today with basically a continuation of that request, but ready to break it down into segment parts of it. If we could move forward at this point, we would place a priority on finishing a food service and cafeteria in our middle school. That would become the foundation for the rest of the work that would be needed in that particular complex. That amount is about $5.8 million. And it is also, we've asked, at the request of the Department of Education, Mr. Bulger and Audrey Bomstead, they asked us to break it down also in a time in which we've got some economic stimulus. How many people would be employed in a project such as this, and how soon could it get underway, and how soon could it get completed? And with your indulgence, I'd like to share a little bit of that data, because we've actually done the work on that, and so we would be ready to move as quickly as possible upon notice that the dollars would be forthcoming. The actual project itself, we estimate, would be 25,830 hours. That would include everything from architectural fees to labor to all of the vendors that would provide, the specialty consultants, engineers, etc. If we had the opportunity to move forward on this, we'd be ready to move 120 days after notice, and we would be essentially moving in before January 1. We would put this on a fast track, and our architects and engineers have been working day and night to try to get this together so that it would be presentable. One of the things that I would like to make clear to the members of the committee, Madam Chair, is that we are five separate facilities, and I think there's been some confusion in the past that this has been one project and one building that this funding has gone for. Essentially, it's upgrading the buildings and bringing them into code in some of the areas. We are very inefficient in the area of heating and ventilation. Because it has been separate projects, we now have in the middle school, high school complex, three separate boilers that are online. This project would actually, when completed, would put it under one system here, and we would also like to explore with other funding sources if necessary, geothermal kinds of opportunities as well as wind energy. We think we've got a perfect opportunity right on the southern shores of the Red Lake. And I might add that the current systems that we have in place are compatible, and so it would not take modification. It would just be putting those pieces in place, and we would be ready to go. So I would be happy to respond to any questions. I think as we move down the road to recovery, those of you that recall the tragedy of March 21, 2005, the facilities are actually part of that recovery process here, and providing adequate facilities for the children that we serve. And I may also add that we've got a vote of confidence in our community as well. The parents are bringing children back, whereas they were open enrolled out immediately after, and we would all understand that. But particularly in this past year, we've had any number of children that are moving back into our system here, knowing that it is safe, drug-free, and the quality of education is also there as well. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And we have heard very good reports from Commissioner Segrin and others about what a good job is being done, and how the students are coming back, and the leadership in the school is doing a very good job. So thank you for that. Any questions from members? Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if who has the information. Just to refresh my memory and maybe to inform some of the others, there has been a lot of work done at the Red Lake School in the last number of years, and if we could refresh us quickly on the projects and the investment we've made in the school at this point in time, maybe over the last, I think the handout here references the last 7 years, and maybe that would suffice to kind of know where we're at. It looks to me like the project is about $35 million altogether. Is that right? With the elementary and the middle school and this most recent?
Yes.
Superintendent Gitch.
So we have a background on the last 7 years. I know we've done a lot of work there. I visited there, and it's a pretty beautiful facility now, at least what's been done.
Superintendent Gitch.
Madam Chair, it is. The middle school, high school complex is, I would say, a first-class facility, and yet very inefficient, as I tried to point out here, with three boiler and steam systems that are in there. What this project would essentially do is to also tie those together. We have done some work at the elementary and early childhood center as well, and we have also done a small amount of work at our Panema facility. And so, yes, there is. I mean, we are very grateful for the support that we've received in the past, and it would be certainly my desire that we could wrap this up and we wouldn't have to be coming back each and every year. But until we finally address the basic needs of the facilities here, I'm afraid that we're tied to this because of our inability to be able to address our own needs. I might also add one piece, if I may, which is we are seeking all other sources that might be available through impact aid, for example, because we do receive the dollars for our lost tax revenues. We are exploring those possibilities both through regular funding as well as economic stimulus. We will be applying, and should we receive that funding here, it would be a deduct from the request that we would have here.
Very good, and Dr. Melcher, when he was presenting at this committee earlier, you know, was hopeful that that hopefully would come to pass. So we hope so too. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know, maybe Mr. Cole, maybe you'd have the numbers that we've done in the last two or three bonding cycles, and we've done significant investment.
Mr. Cole.
Sure, Madam Chair and members. In 2008, the legislature allocated $16 million. To Red Lake. In 2005, $18 million. In 2002, $12.5 million. In 2000, $11 million. And then back in 1992, about $10 million. And there was an additional amount of about $500,000 allocated outside of the bonding project or bonding process out of the general fund for costs associated with this school shooting.
And Representative Demmer, it seems like, I think in our memories, more than what it is, because we passed it, but unfortunately sometimes it's been line item vetoed, and so it hasn't always come through, even when we feel like we have had more years than that. It hasn't come to fruition. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding from what you said, Madam Chair, is that even though these are in the bonding bills, that this doesn't all get allocated and they all get spent, is that right?
Mr. Crow.
I'm sorry.
I thought that these were all monies that actually have been spent.
Yeah,
but according to Madam Chair, maybe they didn't.
No, Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, I think what Representative Dreiling was pointing out, for example, is that it might seem like more because in the 2008 session, for example, the House bill included $32 or $36 million for Red Lake, but then ultimately, after the conference committee put the bill together, it ended up being $16 million. So these are actual amounts allocated and spent by the district. But I think over time, the House and the Senate have individually passed quite a bit more than this. It's just those are the amounts that went into law.
Any other questions? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what is the current request dollar amount?
Superintendent Gibbs.
Madam Chair, the actual amount requested is a total of almost $36 million, but for the project at hand here, the one that we would like to move forward in this non-bonding year is $5.8 million. That would lay the foundation to complete the rest of the work, which would go into the boilers as well, but that's the food service, the cafeteria, and basically all the prep work for the rest of the project.
Okay, Representative Detmer, you bring up a good question, and so we should amend those amounts into the bill then. And the first one you said was 5.8 on line 1.8, and on line 1.15 it was, did you say 4? Ms. Rep. Superintendent Gish?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I do not have a copy of the bill. And
oh. Or the other question is, do you want to carry the full amount of the request to the bonding committee and then pare it down there? Because we're passing today without recommendation. Okay. Superintendent Gish.
Madam Chair, that would be our desire if it can move forward that way, and that would basically cover the entire project here. And again, understanding just the non-bonding year that we're in, that we're at the discretion of the committee.
Well, then we'll have staff help us with making sure we get that right. But in the meanwhile, Representative Detmer has a follow-up.
Madam Chair, a follow-up. Thank you. I think the Senate version is $5.780 million.
Okay. Well, we never take instruction from them. So as long as they prefer, as long as it's the bonding committee that tears things down and we're passing without recommendation, why don't we get the bill in the shape that Representative Saylor would like it? So Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, if it's the full amount, what would that be?
Madam Chair, it is the 5.78.
Okay, 5.78 on line 1.8?
Okay. Yes. Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Mr. Crow. Okay, what?
Madam Chair, we want to make sure you and the superintendent aren't talking past each other.
And we probably are. So, Mr. Crowe,
there are two issues here. One of those is whether you want these projects listed separately in the bill, or secondly, whether you're simply putting in a total dollar amount of the project that Red Lake is requesting for this year.
I was, Mr. Strom, just asking what he wants on line 1.8 and 1.15.
But Adam Chair, that's the total of their total bonding request this year. Is that correct?
Well, and I did, Mr. Superintendent, you had originally said, not, you're saying 5.78, but I thought earlier you were saying something about 36 that was the total. So that's what we're confused about. If you could explain what the 5.78 is that you're suggesting for line 1.8.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry for confusing the committee. The entire project is in excess of $36 million. That would take care of all of the facility needs, the energy efficiency issues that we're bringing forward at this time. What we were asking for, and it was after talking with Representative Saylor, that she was going to ask for that first segment of the construction, which was the $5.78 million.
So on line 1.8, it is $5,781,000.
Yep.
And then what about line 1.15? The same thing? Okay, they're both the same.
Okay, same thing.
$5,781,000 on line 1.8 and on line 1.15. This line? Okay. So on the staff is pointing out that on line 1.10, despite the fact that now we're only focusing on completing the high school, it says to design, construct, renovate, furnish, and equip school facilities for health and safety capital in the Red Lake School District. But if we're looking at just finishing up the high school, middle school complex, do you want us to have the staff come up with language right now that would conform with that request? Superintendent Gish.
Madam Chairman, any language here that would seem to fit here, it is our entire, as the request, the initial request come forward is for the entire school district here, but this project is for that middle school, high school project. Yes, it is.
All right. Well, then we'll take a second while the staff gets us something ready. And in the meanwhile, though, are there any other questions? Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have to, for the record, I mean, since 2000, we've invested $56 million in the Red Lake School, and this $6 million almost would put us at about $62 million. And with the, if we do all 35, we'd be at $91 million in the last 8 years invested in the Red Lake School. That's quite an investment in a K-12 facility that has 1,300 students, Madam Chair. I would like to hear a little bit more. I mean, I've been up there, and I saw it, and it's a very nice school, that's for sure, but that would be $90 million. In this K-12 school, Madam Chair, and that's I just need to be on record.
Okay, Superintendent Gish.
Madam Chairman, not all of the approved items, as has been pointed out, has been actually approved and signed by the governor. There have been line item vetoes in there. I'm sorry that I can't tell you exactly what the amount has been, but this last round we did not receive funding in 2008.
President Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Crowe just told us that the numbers he gave us was actually money. I mean, it was $16 million in 2008 when it was requested 32, so $56 million has been bonded and has been spent,
okay,
from my understanding. Add $35 million in your current request, that gets us to $91 million. That would be if we did. Now, I understand that $35 is not being asked for right now, but I think it just, the numbers need to be out there. We need to understand. We've got a lot of schools, Madam Chair, around the state that would beg for $5 million. And, if this $6 million goes through, we'd be at $62 million, and I'm not including the $10 million that was done back in 1992. So I just think it needs to be on the record, and members need to know the kind of investment we have for that school. And I'm, you know, I've been up there, I've visited, I have voted for bonding for the school in the past. I'm just throwing it out for information as we contemplate the further investment.
Thank you. Representative Ansel.
Well, members, just to provide a little balance here, you know, our decisions are difficult, but there's a high price to pay, unfortunately, for poverty, especially in a community of color. So just consider that as you do your prioritization.
Thank you, Representative Ansel. The staff now has given us language. The staff is saying that I was wondering if my memory was incorrect, but it's better than they were saying at the beginning. The $16 million was vetoed. I was thinking we had a veto in there, and it wasn't just pared back that year. It was pared back, but then it ultimately was also vetoed. So Representative Demmer, subtract off $16 million from your calculation. Okay, now we have the $5,781,000 added in on line 1.8 and 1.15. And now if you would turn your attention, members, to line 1.10. And after equip, insert the middle and high, so it now reads equip the middle and high school facilities. And on line 1.11, strike and for health and safety capital improvements, and then it will just be the remainder at the Red Lake School District. So now it says that the new money is to design, construct, renovate, furnish, and equip the middle and high school facilities at Red Lake School District. Superintendent Gish or Mr. Bulger, any comments on those changes? They sound good. Okay. Is there any testimony for or against the bill in the audience? Any other questions from members? I never actually moved this bill because I was waiting for Representative Saylor, but I think we'll proceed without her. So I will move House File 273 and to pass without recommendation to the Finance Committee. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is passed to the Finance Committee. So members, that is the end of our voting, or our hearing, bonding committee bills that we need to rank order on your orange sheet. So why don't you take a minute to rank order, pass them in, and then if do we have anyone here who can speak to the other two bills? So we may have to, we'll have to wait on those. But rank order these.
I'll
speak them on. President Garofalo, did you bring cookies? Okay. Do we know how our bill is coming? Okay, thank you. And when you pass them in, give them to Liz.
You want to go to
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative.
While we're waiting, Madam Chair, I have a bill that's coming that will have some bonding, but it's got to do with the water portion of the Legacy Act. And so we're seeing it first in Kent Eakin's committee as a policy thing, and then it goes to their committees. But it has to do with schools also, and it's a consortium of 10 school districts that are looking at finding a way to capture water, rainwater, runoff, and that sort of thing, and use it as high school programs and middle school programs in the district. but it's evidently got a long process, and I was just brought the bill yesterday. So I'm not quite sure when you do ranking if it's each time a bill comes before the committee that you have a different ranking, or do we look at them, you know, all together?
This is the day for the ones going to the bonding committee,
okay.
But it sounds like yours is going to represent Murphy's committee, is that right?
That will go there also, yeah. But I didn't know if I have to bring it to Madam Chair to K-12 finance.
Well, Representative Newton, it sounds like yours is in the same category as the two that we're going to hear when and if Representative Saylor gets here, in the sense it's being funded, hers are being sent to the Energy Committee, which will prioritize those and send them along. But if you have things in Representative Murphy's committee, they actually probably keep them there and fund them, I'm thinking. But if it has to do with education, it would be good if we had an informational hearing. We wouldn't even have to have the bill, just like the two that we have here now, we don't have. In fact, Representative Saylor is actually presenting one of these bills at this very minute in another committee. We were hoping it would not conflict like this. They must be having a lot of questions of her over there. But then we wouldn't actually vote on it. It would just be a courtesy hearing to us, so we know what other committees are doing. So if you could talk to Shannon about that when you actually get the bill number, and we'll try to schedule that.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have some downtime for discussion right now, or would you prefer
here
to...
Mrs. Shannon, let's hear from her on how long we have to wait, and we'll know how much downtime we have.
Thank you.
They're taking a vote, so Representative Garofalo, it's all yours till they get here.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, for some of the newer members in the committee, I think it might be appropriate just to lay out a background of what we have right now and where we're going to be going. Historically, the state of Minnesota has had a rule, a guideline, not in statute, but it's called a 3% rule. It started during the Purpich administration, where you take a look at general fund revenues, and no more than 3% of that can go towards principal and interest payments on our general obligation bonds. Because of the state of the economy and the dramatic reduction in revenues, we are now in excess of the 3% guideline. And I want to certainly be respectful. I understand we're having hearings on this stuff, but in case everyone hasn't heard, we're broke. We don't have any money. And unless there's going to be a federal requirement for bonding matches, we ain't going to pass a bonding bill this year. And I would much rather we be spending our energy, not in deference and respect to the chair, I understand she has to do what she's got to do, but I wish we were spending our time doing stuff that we actually have to do something about, because we're not going to have a bonding bill this year. We're over 3% already. And I think most members understand that, but maybe I don't know. Maybe members don't understand that we're over our limit. The state of Illinois, just today, S&P downgraded their bonds. Today. Okay, if we, for some reason, decide that we're going to pass a bonding bill, we're going to get our bonds downgraded. This is what's happening to other states. So I'm hoping members are going through the motions here, but really not thinking that we're going to do this stuff.
Thank you. And a little bit of information. One thing you said was very accurate, mm-hmm. and that is that the perfect 3% is a guideline. And if you listen to Chair Houseman of the Capital Investment Committee, she's very clear that that the Governor Perfich, which he did with many of his other fine ideas, you know, kind of pulled that number out of thin air. And it really wasn't rooted in any kind of science. So we could exceed it. It's just he had a really good idea for fiscal conservatism and to have some sort of number, so we knew that we couldn't stretch to the moon. But now, when we have this very bad, losing 75,000 jobs this year, 80,000 next year, some are thinking, I'm one of them, that having a little bit of job creation here is something that we could look at to stimulate our economy. And so that's what we're doing here. And if you're paying attention to the governor, he is not ruling out, Representative Rockwell, a bonding committee, a bonding bill. The Senate has a larger number to work with than the House does. And the governor is talking about some sort of limited bonding bill. So we have to get, as usual, the three numbers together. But no one, the Senate, the House, or the governor, has ruled out a bonding bill. They're all agreeing on having one. It's just a question of the size. So our duty here is to rank order our choices, and when the number is finalized, I always think, and I bet everyone at this table does, that all of our requests, even those that we rank towards the end, are higher requests than a lot of the others that come from other committees, because we are dealing with children and students and schools, and to me those just rise above other things that might be nice, but they aren't quite so essential as a good building for our students. And I know that Representative Garofalo strongly agrees with me on this. Representative Taylor, did you know we passed your first bill without you? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I feel like perhaps I can just go home.
No, you got two more bills.
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. The Energy Committee was so thoroughly enjoying them that while I was sitting there going, let me go, they were having questions. And, of course, the same two testifiers were testifying there as well. So it was our intention, actually, to make things easier for both committees. Perhaps we did not, but we wanted to have the testifiers in both places.
Representative Taylor, it didn't matter a bit because Representative Garofalo did the two-step while we were waiting for you, and now we're all done with our break.
I thank Representative Garofalo for that.
Okay.
You want somebody to move
your bill? Representative Taylor, we don't need to move your bill.
Okay.
Because as you know, we don't actually have them here. And,
okay.
But if you could start out with House File 1259. And do we have... Yeah. Do members have these in their packets? It's only me that seems to have lost mine in my file. Thank you. Okay. 1259, if you could tell us about that bill. And we just mainly want to know what good things are being proposed in the Energy Committee that we ourselves are not going to have to make recommendations on. But we just want to keep abreast of your work, and we know that it ties in also with the stimulus money, and so we're just anxious to know whatever you can tell us.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The reason that I have two bills is simply because they have two different funding sources. The testimony is the same for both of those. I have been trying to address the needs that our schools have for meeting their heating costs now and on into the future. And as I have been going through so many different energy proposals, the solar thermal, which is not generating electricity, solar PV generates electricity. Solar thermal makes heat. And it can heat your swimming pool, it can heat your hot water system, it can heat your building. There is currently a school, the St. Anthony School, not far from here, that has one of these solar walls that has been now for a year and a half in production. Unfortunately, none of those folks can come and testify about that particular piece. However, I do have other testifiers. And the thing about the solar walls, I actually had the opportunity to see one of those this summer on a legislative energy workshop, and I was so struck by the fact that they're simple, they're relatively cheap, they do not require a lot of extra electrical work. They hook right into existing HVAC system if you're retrofitting a school that's already in existence. And certainly you can build, if you're building a new school, the opportunities are even better for these solar walls. And there are Minnesota companies, one of which will be testifying here today, that make solar thermal panels. There are a couple of Minnesota businesses that do, and that's why we're trying to stimulate jobs here in Minnesota, so that is another key piece of this. But these walls are available, and I'll just say that maybe my school was looking at the bills that I got out, but I got a phone call from our business manager just beseeching me to try to see what I could do to help out. And this is after the bill, saying that, you know, our boilers are 39 years old at the high school, and they're way beyond normal expectancy. They've been limping along, and I know that is the case for many, many of our school districts as well. And they're trying to figure out how on earth they can meet those needs. They spent over $375,000 last year on heating alone. The Bemidji School District, it was $425,000 the year before. So we know that those costs are significant. We'd rather have some of that money going into the classrooms. Therefore, I had design these bills so that we could access either bonding money or stimulus. And I will clarify, as from the last committee, it's either or. Although I'd be really happy with $10 million for heating costs for schools, five is what we're looking for here, one or the other. But we wanted to be sure there was a funding source. And I think with that, I will ask the testifiers to come up so that you guys can move on with other things.
Very good. Thank you very much. If whichever of you is going first, you can say your name and company for the tape and then give us your testimony, and then the same for the next person. Thank you.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Randy Hagen, co-owner of Silver Skies Manufacturing. And we're located in Starbuck, West Central Minnesota, and Representative Anderson's district. So glad to be here. Thank you. I feel it's important to mention a little bit about our company. I don't want to be self-serving here, but it's important to note that solar is manufactured in Minnesota. And that's good for, as you might imagine, people in manufacturing, as well as the end users of this product and everybody involved in the systems all the way in between. We're a three-year-old company. We sell product throughout the entire United States, and now we're approved in Canada. And what's very important, what we manufacture is a solar thermal collector that makes hot water. And these are SRCC-rated products, so they're governed by the Solar Rating and Certification Corporation. And our company provides manufactures these panels and all the other necessary mounting components, and does provide training for contractors to put these up on rooftops. Basically, what a panel solar collector is, quite simple. It's a box with glass or glazing on top. Inside the box is a copper manifold. It's important to have all copper here in the state of Minnesota, where it does get extremely cold. Our good friends in Ely told me minus 60, and we can have over 300 degrees in that same collector all on the same day. So we build high-quality collectors built for this environment. Minnesota is a great solar resource. We're on par with the amount of radiation as Houston, Texas, and the Panhandle of Florida. A common question we get is, how do these work in extreme conditions? This is just a little test stand off the side of our building, showing a good heavy snowfall. This is taken in the morning. This is later that afternoon. If there's enough radiation to be useful, the panels will self-clean, provided there is adequate space for the snow to fall underneath the panels. And probably the second most common question we get is, how strong are they? So I think the answer is fairly clear there. Talking about the solar industry, and I want to give a basic understanding. Pretty much we all understand or hear about solar electric, and that's more awareness. It has more incentives coming its way. Solar thermal really is underutilized. It has a lower level of awareness, and therefore lower incentives, but it's really the workhorse of the solar industry. Types of solar thermal products that Representative Taylor did mention, the collectors we make produce hot water. Another Minnesota manufacturing company, Rural Renewable Energy Alliance in northern Minnesota, makes hot air collectors. And then the solar wall, or the transpired air collectors, they're not manufactured in our state, but they're manufactured in North America. Solar electric versus solar thermal. And solar electric does have its place, a very important place, but it's different than solar thermal. Solar thermal is much more efficient when you're looking at investing dollars into renewable. If you have a limited budget, solar thermal often is the first place to look. Solar thermal can be used residentially for domestic hot water. It can also be used commercially for processed hot water, for radiant floor heating systems, swimming pools. And just a quick rundown of what a collector solar system is comprised of. Collectors on your roof, this would be for a four-person household. In your utility room, you'd have a solar tank with a heat exchanger in that. The fluid is transferred by a pump. And then there's what's called a differential controller that tells the system when to tell the pump when to start and stop based on your needs. And a quick graphic here of how that works. The sun is coming out, heating up the panel and the fluid within the panel. That fluid then is pumped to the, if it's a two-tank system, the primary tank would have the heat exchanger in there, and the fluid then gets pushed back up to the collector to get further heated. Now you've got a tank full of hot water, and that feeds whatever's downstream of it. It might feed 100% of the load for your boiler or your heating system. If it feeds 50%, then your whatever's downstream just works the difference. We talked about residential applications. I'm going to go, here, forward to some commercial installs. This is the world's largest laundry, or so they claim, in Chicago, using solar thermal. And a look at some commercial applications, and this is might be what you see on top of schools. We've got Wigwam Mills, sock manufacturer, Kalahari Resort in the upper left, assisted living facility in the lower left, and this is a penthouse of a commercial building, just showing a different way of installing collectors. Want to show here aesthetics too. That's always the concern if they're mounted right. I think actually from my perspective it's enhancing the looks of the resort. Of course that's a biased statement. And a few things about the collector system, some statistics. It's the largest system, this one, in the state of Wisconsin. It prevents 70 tons of CO2 from entering the atmosphere. So not only is this saving money, it's preserving resources, it's cutting emissions as well. And why is it a good fit on schools? That's what we're here to hear about. Solar thermal is technology that's here. It's not some far-off thing that hasn't been tried and tested. Built right here in the state, it's not grid-dependent, so we're freeing up that space for maybe wind transmission. We don't have to build gas lines for this. This reduces the loads. Works perfectly with our peak power needs. And we hear a lot about shovel-ready projects. This is a product that's certainly made in Minnesota, can be available across the entire United States. We've got a contractor system here in Minnesota that's ready to go. We've got buildings that are in need right now. Architects and engineers are involved with solar thermal. A little bit on some of the benefits. Maybe Craig can touch on some of this when he gives specific examples. But Professor Jane Davidson from the University of Minnesota, she says energy consumption in buildings represents 39% of primary U.S. energy. And that's a pretty astounding figure. If we can take quite a bite out of that through education and solar, I think we're going to go a long way. Why it's important to talk about our federal incentives for solar thermal. There are residential and commercial incentives, but none of these apply to pools, and none of them apply to nonprofits, which most of our schools are. So it's important we consider bills like this that will enable buildings in need and districts in need to take advantage of this technology. Also on the state level, there's no renewable energy incentive program currently for schools. Why are schools such a great match for solar thermal? Well, as I just mentioned, there is no current program for that. Large users of utility, and these dollars, if freed up, could go to more beneficial causes like education itself, what the schools are all about in the first place. And they do serve as educational pieces for the students to look at, take classes on. And a bit of levity here, I want to stress it's a bipartisan issue. We were fortunate to have Senator Klobuchar and Senator Coleman visit our plant last year, and we've had many state representatives and state senators also. And I want to conclude my portion here. This is the Wellstone Apartments. Probably a lot of you have heard about this project, and it has solar thermal, and the system was engineered and designed by Craig Tarr of Energy Concepts. And Craig, I'll turn it over to you. Oh, excuse me, first, Madam Chair, is there any questions?
Any questions? And I noticed that Representative Anderson is a co-author of the bill, and we heard it's in his district. So we'll take you first, and then Representative Garofalo. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Not a question, just a comment that Randy's business, located in my hometown, does a great job. It's been an economic boon for the city there and the county as a whole, and I just fully support what he's doing and trying to get this type of project further along. It's just a great topic, great idea. And thanks.
Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Two quick questions. One, the federal tax credit, I just want to make sure that I understand it right. Is the tax credit maximum $1,500 for at the federal level? Is that the tax credit that was referred to?
Mr. Hagan.
Madam Chair and Representative, the federal tax credit is up to 30% of the installed project. If it's a commercial project,
And there's no cap on that. If it's a
$100,000
project, they get $30,000 back as a federal tax credit.
So that's
an important point. That doesn't extend to schools and nonprofits.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, just in terms of, generally speaking, I know every project is different. Usually the trade-off is that higher capital costs now, lower operating costs going into the future. Generally speaking, what's the average return on investment on that? When does it pay for itself, generally speaking?
Mr. Hagan.
Madam Chair and Representative, Craig Tarr will address that better than myself as an engineer and installer of the systems, but roughly speaking, it's going to be on a large, a complicated system like a school with multiple pools. It might be 15 to 20 years unincentivized.
Let's go to Mr. Tarr, and then we'll ask, you can ask your question again, Representative Grasso, and we have Representative Anzels and Representative Detmer, but looking at the hour, let's get in Mr. Tarr, and I think maybe some of the questions can be answered by both. If you could state your name and your title and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Craig Tarr. I'm a licensed engineer in 15 states, so I'm representing the engineering community. As a person who has designed well over $300 million of mechanical systems in schools and many state government type of buildings, I am considered an expert in the field of mechanical engineering, boiler plants, heating plants, that type of thing. And so I say that to preface the fact that the solar thermal systems, they work. They work very, very well. They are not designed to replace base building heating systems, the water heating systems or the pool heating systems. Consider that they are a preheating device where if it's a cloudy day in December or several days, you still need the base building system that's there to provide the energy needs for the process, whether it's the showers, the kitchen, or the pool. There's days like today where the sun is out and it's cold, but maybe that solar system will provide 50% or meet half of the needs. Then your base building system operates at a lesser capacity to get to where you need to get. And then there's days in April, the shoulder months where the sun is staring straight at the collectors where a solar system can meet 100% of the heating needs. Again, whether it's domestic water, water for the dishwashers in the kitchen or the pool. So these systems do work very well. They actually are very simple. They can be tied easily and integrated into the existing mechanical systems in a school. I'd like to dispel the myth that in the 70s, in the Carter administration, solar collectors were just being built in garages and the stuff fell apart and many schools put them on and had to take them off. Today, manufacturers like Mr. Hagan here in Solar Skies, with their SRCC certification, there is a standard body and the quality of these goods are there such that there's no reason that a well-maintained solar system is not going to last at least 20, if not 30 years. Some school districts, independent of, may have a conversation in their community about offsetting carbon. Carbon is a controversial thing. The fact is, a dollar spent on solar hot water will reduce three times more carbon reduction than a dollar spent on solar electricity. So from a carbon reduction standpoint, if that's some communities have that as a sensitive issue, even independent of the school districts themselves, it is a more beneficial technology for reducing carbon. That doesn't mean it's three times the payback. That means that a dollar spent on one will yield three times more reductions in carbon than a dollar spent on solar electricity. It is a benefit to our natural gas grid because as time goes on, we're going to get more and more renewable electricity from the likes of Xcel and Great River in the form of wind and concentrating solar. Yet our natural gas supplies further are being diminished by peaking plants, and there isn't going to be enough cows, even in Minnesota, to do enough methane gas digesters to fulfill our 60-pound gas line spreading throughout the state. So, this is made more of an issue for the Energy Committee, but in long-term supply, a long-term issue, solar thermal is very good at reducing natural gas demands. And I'd like to say, I've actually transitioned my business from engineering into, I've combined solar installations with my engineering, and I recently completed a job for the Osceola School District in Wisconsin. We put a large solar pool heating system on, and I can't tell you the amount of interest this has generated in the community, in the district. They put instrumentation on their solar system at an increased cost over the base cost to put it in to be able to bring it into the classroom.
So now you can go into a science classroom, and there on the monitor will be real-time data for this particular system. And now they've got students doing projects on solar systems. And make no mistake, this is a huge avenue for kids that may not want to go to college. And even I'm a college-educated person, and this is what I'm doing now. So it is a very viable educational tool to create interest for kids to go forward and pursue this as a career. I did another project for River Falls High School. We did a solar electric project. We actually went in and gave a presentation as a science unit. And on the day of the installation, we had the tech ed kids out there. And they were working. They had to sign release forms from their parents to come out and work. But we actually had them out there working. And I know for a fact that since that project, two of the kids have gone on to a tech college in Wisconsin that actually has a renewable energy program.
Fantastic. I'm going to stop you right there because we've got 1 more minute. We've got 2 questions.
Okay.
We'll get at least one in. Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very friendly question to the author. On page 1, line 11, you use the word swimming pools. Wouldn't it be better if you said physical education facilities?
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Antel. I wanted to be very clear about swimming pools, actually. And I was afraid, you know, that was what I meant, is to save the money on the pools because it's such a huge energy drain for schools. And I thought that, you know, if you didn't put swimming pools in there, somebody might say, well, that can't be pools, it's just a gym. So that's my concern. We could expand it to cover all sorts of things, but I wanted to be sure that the energy hog that a swimming pool is would be covered.
And quite frankly, Representative Saylor, what jumps out at me is that we're using this technology and this money to heat swimming pools, thereby saving conventional energy to heat classrooms, and I don't know that that's a good thing.
Thank you, and we don't have the bill, of course.
I know.
We can't amend it here, but that's a good input. So, and members, the meeting time is over, but Representative Saylor, do you have a closing comment?
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for your indulgence. I'm sorry the Energy Committee had so much fun with us earlier. I just feel that this bill is very, very important to be saving money for schools. And there's lots more that we didn't even tell you, but I'd be happy to share that with you individually at another time. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to your testifiers. The meeting is adjourned.